So thank you for the last question. It really set me up in a good way. Because really what I want to do this morning and for the practice from now until the next session is expanding the metta practice to, we're going to open it up from that may I be at ease phrase to a couple of different phrases so you can get a chance to see that. So I'm using the phrases of may I be at ease, may I be at peace, and may I be content in this moment just as it is. And so using the three phrases, there's actually a lot of research and theory about what's called three-pointed concentration. For some reason, the mind does really well with three. And so what the three phrases do is it might help overcome your question around it becoming too mechanical. It also gives you a wider range of concepts. So there's the concept of being at ease. There's the concept of being at peace. There's the concept of being content in this moment just as it is. And just as it is a conceptual framework to give us some recognition of like, well, how is it right now? Just as it is. Well, what is this? And that gives us a chance to recognize some of the things that might be arising in which we don't feel at ease, or we feel resistant towards, we feel aversion towards, we feel angry at, we feel should not be happening. So those three ideas, they also will build some concentration because you have to pay attention in a way of knowing what phrase you just said, what phrase is next. And what it does is it can build a kind of repetition that will allow you to be more present. So it does train the mind to kind of have a more narrow cognitive focus without trying to completely ignore the mind. So in some sense, I would say that we're just using thinking in a very, very skillful way. Because what happens in concentration practice when we're just trying to ignore the mind and we're just back to the body, back to the breath, if the mind starts to kind of feel a little bit abandoned, it's like, well, what the hell am I supposed to do? I'm just going to sit here and patiently wait for you to give me some attention. It's like, no, you're here too, and we're going to give you something to do. We'll keep you busy so you don't make a mess. And so that really actually tries to be helpful, because then what it does is it allows you to have an integrated process where the efficiency of a practice like this, which is the practice that I call embodied metta, is there is body awareness, there's a heavy degree of awareness in the body and the breath and sensation and sound. I'll open the instructions to include sound some. There's also perhaps and very likely to be a higher degree of emotional access because of the concept, because of the intentionality around recognizing that there's a desire to be at ease, to be free. A very kind of humanistic, wholesome, healthy, important desire that we have. That oftentimes feelings and emotions can arise around that. It doesn't necessarily guarantee that the feeling or the emotion is going to be pleasing. Sometimes the outcome can be sometimes it can actually create a sense of disappointment around all of the ways in which we are not at ease or have not been at ease. And so if you find that happening a little bit, don't let that disappoint you further or think that there's something wrong. It's just likely with these metta practices and any of these Brahma-Vihara practices, what's very common as we attempt to do one thing, in a polarized sense, the opposite arises. So for me, for years and years, I used to say, may I be at ease? And my mind would say, yeah, I'm not at ease. And that's why I don't use this phrase, this very common metta phrase, may I be happy? Because happy is such a very problematic word, I think, for many people. I would say, may I be happy? And my mind would say, I am definitely not happy. And if you want to know why, I will explain it to you very... And I would just get caught and I would just actually leave the meditation hall and go have some tea. So you have to just kind of be warned, I guess, that you might find that happens. That's why I try to pick and have worked over the years of trying to come up with phrases that I think are very disarming for most people. So ease is not a too far of a grasp, too far of a concept to understand. Ease, peace, contentment, okay with, it's like this right now kind of experience. So there's awareness, there's a liberal awareness towards the body, there's a liberal awareness towards the heart, towards the emotion, and there's also some recognition and some inclusion of thinking through the repetition of the phrase. And it takes a type of effort to do this because you have to kind of monitor these three. So it takes a type of effort. It also can create a very nice type of collectedness or samadhi, where all of the pieces, all of the systems, the mind, heart, body system is all integrated. Everything's included in that kind of framework of practice. It also allows you to not be too hypervigilant or too focused on the right object or a single object. It's more of an awareness practice. It's like, oh yeah, the body, the breath, the sounds, the metta. It gives you a kind of holistic way to work. So you're not actually really excluding anything, but you're trying to just meet all of it with this kind of benevolent sense of ease. So if you notice some pain or discomfort arising in the thighs or the knees, and that becomes part of the practice, and recognizing that, may I be at ease with this? And I think one of the things that's very important to acknowledge, and it's maybe a little counterintuitive to us, is what we're looking for in practice, and really what we're looking for in our lives, a sense of contentment and well-being, these kinds of things, to become homeostatic. These experiences are actually in your body. They're not in the mind. Well-being, pain, all of it, it's all in the body. You know, in the famous book on trauma, by Bessel van der Kolk, the body keeps the score. There's a lot of memory in the body. The body's really got most of our data. What? No, it doesn't. It's all in my thinking mind. It's really not, actually. So when we look at the way experience happens, is we really have these three components. We have the body, we have the emotion, the body, the heart, and the mind all co-arise in every single moment. You can't draw lines between them. Where does your breath end and the awareness of your breath begin? You can't draw that line. Where does the sound of the bird end and your awareness of it begin? You can't locate that. So we have to have a little bit more, I think, respect for complexity in terms of bringing awareness into things like the body and the breath has a lot more benefits than we might anticipate or expect. Because for a variety of perhaps obvious reasons, growing up in the culture that we all did, we really value the mind. And we think that, you know, the mind's always looking for somewhere to land. And, you know, when the mind searching, to some degree craving for some place to land, trying to find a self, a version of self that's happy or content or okay, but it can't really find it. So the mind, it just keeps looking. So we, in practice, the Buddha was very pragmatic. He's like, well, take your mind, take your awareness, take your attention, just take it straight to the body. Take it all right to the body. Live from the body, be embodied. The body's pretty slow. A lot of patience in the body. But when we aren't able to do that, when we can't integrate into the body and the body has pain or discomfort, the body's sore, the body's tired, the body's sleepy, the mind doesn't like that, and the mind wants to go somewhere else. I know that for me, for many years, I started to realize, I was like, my mind hates my body. My mind wants to time travel and go to all these. My mind's got a whole agenda that it wants to go do. Travel the universe or whatever the hell it wants to do. And it just can't do it because the body's like, yeah, well, I kind of can't go with you. So what do you want to do about that? I'm just sitting here. And I got a really, as I said this last night, I believe, I got a huge dose of that when I was in the hospital for multiple weeks. I was like, I can't get up. I can't brush my teeth. I can't take a shower. Without my body, my mind is just like... So we want to try to slow the mind down and have more of a body-based awareness, body-based practice. And to me, what really allows the mind and the body, if we look at mind-body, to have some degree of cooperation, stability, or a good relationship is really in that emotional or that attitude, that metta field. And that kind of ties the two together. Mind, heart, body, mind, heart, body. Because emotion is in the body. We also oftentimes think that emotion is in the mind. Emotion is not in your thinking mind. Emotions actually are in your physiological body. And then the mind creates a story about how we feel emotionally. So I have the somatic emotion of sadness arising in my body, and my mind makes up a story about this person, Dave Smith, who's sad and why he's sad and whose fault is it. That's not emotion, that's just thinking. The sadness is right here. It's in the vagal nerve. It's heat, it's pressure, it's tightness in the throat, it's heaviness. That's sadness. The mind projecting the story or the narrative about that is a different thing. And usually we say that every day in language. Oh, how are you doing? Oh, I'm kind of feeling down today. It's not that I'm feeling down today. It's that I'm thinking down today. I'm thinking negatively or disappointedly or aggravatingly about life. I'm thinking that. I'm not necessarily feeling it. That's why this word feeling is quite problematic. Make sense? I hope so. I try to have a little bit of a respect for the fact that there is a mysterious component to all of this stuff. And so the experiential practice is really so important. So this morning, like I said, we'll do an embodied metta practice in which we will begin to try to integrate the body, the breath, sensation, the foundation of mindfulness, and the heart with a kind, friendly, accepting, patient, whichever word. If we looked at metta and we deconstructed metta, it wouldn't just be about kind friendliness. There's a whole bunch of qualities that contribute to a metta quality, like, you know, acceptance and patience and generosity and goodness and kindness and friendliness and ease. There's a lot of those. So don't get too caught up on the semantics. There's a wide range of ways in which... And there's also a frequency or a height to which the metta... Sometimes the metta is very, very slow, very, very subtle, very hard to see. And sometimes it's quite potent. There's a degree of it. It's not just one... It doesn't just have one volume setting. Metta is a huge dial. So we want to be able to even recognize the small... Even the small... is Tom of it. So if you want to, you can stand for a moment and just kind of let your body take a break before we get into the sitting practice.